And so Lawrence drew the ingot into wire. Then Gottfried arranged it on a board that mimicked the pattern on the circuit drawing. When his magic wand touched a spool of dull gray metal, the metal flowed and dripped upon wire and pin alike, turning instantly solid once more and binding the one to the other. Metal workers used such plumbing metal, but needed fire to make it flow, and Dietrich saw no sign of a fire. The wand, when Gottfried allowed him to touch it, was not even warm. The work required a jeweler's touch, and when something had not been done precisely right, Gottfried would cuff his apprentices or engage in a scuffle with Hans. Even among Krenken, Gottfried was noted for his color. The Krenk worried over the unclothed nature of the wire, but his meaning remained occult, as no German word signified the clothing. When the circuit was ready at last, Gottfried tested it with a device he wore on his belt, and after much discussion with Hans, the Kratzer, and Baron Grosswald, pronounced himself satisfied. The next day, an indifferent snowfall littered the still air. The party gathered in the Burg courtyard. Gottfried, bundled in furs, strapped a flying harness on, from which hung in a protective sack the device he had built. His much-abused apprentice, Wittig, would carry Lawrence to the ship in a sling. The smith had begged the boon of watching, and Baron Grosswald, at Herr Manfred's urging, had consented. Dietrich prayed a blessing on their efforts, and Lawrence knelt upon the icy flagstones and drew the sign of the cross over his body. Before climbing the tower from which the flyers would depart, the smith embraced Dietrich and gave him the kiss of peace. "Pray for me," he said. "Close your eyes until you are again on solid land. I don't fear height, but failure. I'm no coppersmith. The draw's not so fine and regular as Gottfried had asked." Dietrich remained at the base of the tower while the others climbed the narrow spiral steps to the top. Just around the bend of the spiral, the two Krenken tripped on the stumbling blocks. Hans, who had stayed behind with Dietrich, commented on the mason's evident lack of skill. "But no," Dietrich said. "The stumble steps are so attackers climbing the tower trip up. The stairs spiral right-hand-wise for a similar reason. Invaders cannot wield their swords, while the defenders fighting downward have a full swing." Hans shook his head, a gesture he had acquired from his hosts. "Your ineptness proves always cunning." He pointed skyward, though without tilting his head back. "They go." Dietrich watched the flyers until they had become dark specks. The sentries on the walls pointed too, but they had seen such flights now many times, and the novelty of the feat had begun to fade. They had even seen Max Schweitzer fly, though with indifferent success. "Blitzel has no optimism," Hans said. "Who's Blitzel?" Hans pointed toward the flyers as they vanished into the woodland. "Gottfried. We call those who follow his craft little lightnings. During thunder weather, great bolts of the fiery fluid cross our sky, and Gottfried works with smaller versions of the same spirit."
"The Electronicos!"
A Krenk's face could not show astonishment. "You know of it, but you said nothing."
"I deduced its likelihood from philosophic principles."
"When your cog failed, a great wave of Electronicos washed across the village, creating no small havoc." "Give thanks, then, that it was but a ripple," Hans told him. It was difficult to reconstruct afterward what had happened. Gottfried was in another apartment of the vessel and did not see. Perhaps Wittig had spied a loose wire and sought to adjust it, but while he handled the unclothed wire, Gottfried opened the sluice gate, allowing the Electronicos to pour through the channels, and through Wittig, seeking as fluids do the lowest ground. "Lawrence seized Wittig's arm to pull him away," Gottfried told Manfred's inquest afterward, "and the fluid coursed through him as well."
"Like old Pforzheim," Dietrich thought,
"and Holzbrenner and his apprentice, only stronger, as if a torrent had washed the man away. Man's days are like grass," he thought. "The wind blows over him, and he is no more." "The man Lawrence did not know what would befall when he touched Wittig," Grosswald asked. He sat by Manfred and Thierry on the judge's bench, since the affair involved his folk. Gottfried said, He saw that Wittig was in pain.
But you knew, Grosswald insisted.
The servant of the essence made the tossing motion, and all could see the burns on his hands.
I moved too late.
Baron Grosswald ground his forearms slowly together.
That was not why I asked.
After Lawrence's poor burned body had been laid to rest and Dietrich had given Wanda what comfort he could, Gregor came to the parsonage to offer his own condolences, since the two of you were so close. He was a pleasant and gentle man, Dietrich said, good to talk to, and always with the air of more left unsaid. A friendship is shallow, I think, if everything between two men can be said. I'm sure there were things he wished to tell me, but there was always time for them later. Now there is no later.
But Wanda's grief must be the harder.
Gregor shrugged.
She liked him well enough, but they lived as brother and sister.
So, I hadn't known.
Well, Paul commended such a life in his letters.
Oh, she took no vow of celibacy, not so long as Klaus Müller could visit. As for Lawrence, he seemed disinclined, Wanda being Valkyrie enough to daunt any man's ardor.
Klaus Müller and the Frau Schmidt? Gregor smiled knowingly.
Why not? What joy does Hilda bring to the miller's bed?
Dietrich could not contain his astonishment.
While Hildegard Müller's wantonness was well known, he had not expected the same of Wanda, a woman by no means comely. He remembered how on Rock Monday Lawrence had compared his wife and Klaus to the upper and nether millstones.
Had the smith known of and perhaps tolerated his wife's infidelity?
Frau Joachim came breathless to the door.
You are needed in the church, pastor.
Alarmed, Dietrich stood. What's wrong?
Gottfried Krenk. The young man's cheeks red from the cold glowed on his pale face. The dark eyes flashed.
Oh, surely no name was more wonderfully chosen. He has embraced Jesus, and we need you to perform the baptism.
Gottfried waited by the baptistery, but Dietrich took him first into the sacristy and spoke to him alone.
Why do you choose baptism, friend Grasshopper? He demanded.
No sacrament could be valid if its meaning was not understood. Baptism was a matter of will, not water.
Because of Lawrence the smith.
Gottfried rubbed his forearm slowly, a gesture which Dietrich had concluded meant thoughtfulness, although the precise rhythm of the rasps might indicate irritation, confusion, or other sorts of thought.
Lawrence was an artisan, as am I, Gottfried said, a man of low besitting, to be used as those above him would. Injustice do the strong command, injustice do the weak submit.
So the Athenians told the Melians, Dietrich said. But I think our word justice and yours do not signify the same thing.
Manfred cannot use us as the Baron Grosswald uses you. He is limited by the customs and bylaws of the manor.
How can this be, the Krenk asked, if justice is the Lord's will?
Because there is a Lord above all. Manfred is our Lord only under God, meaning that his will is subordinate to the higher justice of God.
We may not obey a bad lord, nor follow an unlawful command.
Gottfried grasped Dietrich's arm, and Dietrich tried not to flinch from the horny touch.
That is the very thing. Your heron folk have obligations to their vassals. Ours do not. Lawrence used his own life to save Wittig, and Wittig was only a... one who labors at whatever is needful, but without the special skills of an artisan,
a gartner. But if Lawrence saw that Wittig was in pain, naturally he tried to help.
But it is not among us natural for the greater to help the lesser. An artisan would not help a mere gartner, not without your charitas to move him.
To be fair, Dietrich said, Lawrence did not know his life would be forfeit.
He knew. Gottfried said, releasing his grip. He knew. I had warned him against touching the wires when they are animate. I told him the fluid could strike a man like lightning. That was how he knew Wittig's peril. Yet he had no thought to stand by and watch him die. Dietrich studied the crank.
Nor had you, he said after a moment.
Guthrie tossed his arm.
I am crank. Could I do less than one of you?
Let me see your hands again. Dietrich took Gottfried by the wrists and turned his hands up. The crankish hand was not like a man's hand. All six fingers could act as thumbs, and they were long compared to the palm, which consequently appeared no bigger than a thaler gold piece.